y'all. Thanks for listening to Killer Queens.
Or KQ if you're nasty.
Welcome to the show where two 90s-loving country chicks gab about true crime and tell each other to talk to the hand because the face ain't listening. I'm Torella.
And I'm Tori.
And we're sisters who have always loved true crime and decided to turn that obsession into a show with a light take on the topic.
Kind of like diet true crime, it's all the flavor and fewer calories.
Now with our show, you'll get true crime, 90s nostalgia, and a few four-letter words sprinkled in.
Because I always say that Polly Pockets and true crime go together like peas and carrots.
Be sure to check out our case submission form on our website at killerqueenspodcast.com and follow us on social media and YouTube.
Now grab your Surge, your 3D Cool Ranch Doritos, and your kitten surprise, and let's get into the episode.
This episode contains discussion of drugging, rape, sexual assault, cults, emotional, physical, and sexual abuse, animal abuse, and poisoning. Pretty much everything that could be disturbing, listener discretion is advised.
In March of 2017, three women filed sexual assault allegations against Danny Masterson, who denied the allegations via his agent. The filing triggered an LAPD investigation, and in December of 2017, a fourth victim came forward with allegations. A few weeks later, a fifth victim came forward with allegations. Masterson was able to escape justice for years by hiding behind the rules or laws of the Church of Scientology. Eventually, though, he was brought to trial and found guilty of rape and given 30 years to life in prison.
Hey, you guys, welcome to Killer Queens. If you've never been here before, we want to give you just a little information about how the show is set up and what it's meant to accomplish. If you have been here before, welcome back. You can just use that handy skip ahead feature here if you want to.
We want to give a message to friends and family of the victims. We know that there may be someone involved in the case who might listen one day, and we want you to know that our intention is to only bring awareness to this case. And while we do use personal stories in some instances and our own humor in order to tell the story in a way that listeners can relate, we have the utmost respect for victims and their families.
We created Killer Queens to be a place where we can have open discussions about cases just like you would with friends. We are not investigators. We use information that is available to the public, such as documentaries, case files, and media coverage. Using this information, we intend to tell the story of what happened in each case that we cover. Now, will you agree with our interpretations or conclusions of each case? Well, heck no.
Mm-mm. We each approach cases from different perspectives, life experiences, and beliefs that we already have in place. And sometimes these differences are slight, yet they can be wide enough to cause divide and upset some of those listening. We do our best to present the facts as we find them in our research, but we do bring our own perspectives to the case. We understand that you will too. We want you to know that this is a safe space to discuss differences and opinions in a civilized manner. Our style may not be your personal preference, and if that's the case, we know you'll be able to find one of the many other shows out there to tell the story the way you want to hear it. We can be grown-ups about it if you can.
Now, if we are your cup of tea and you want even more KQ, you can join our Patreon and get access to our entire catalog of episodes ad-free and access to bonus episodes too. And I'll give you just a little hint if you're an ad skipper, but you still want the deals that we have from our sponsors each week, you can scroll down to the show notes and see what coupons we have available for you right down there.
But you didn't hear it from us.
That's a pro tip, but I'll deny ever sharing it.
Right. So all that being said, let's get into the story. My, oh my.
Sucks to suck, Danny Masterson. All right. So, we want to give a thank you as well. Almost didn't do it to Mark for writing this one up.
Yes. And I'm going to go ahead and thank myself because I'm the one who alerted everyone that, what are you doing over there?
Lost it.
I was the one that broke the news first.
In the group chat thing?
Yeah.
You mean? Yeah. Yeah. So thank you. Thank you.
I have no problem thanking myself.
Oh, no. I think to start out, we should talk a little bit about what to expect from these episodes. So we're going to discuss what Masterson was accused and convicted of, including having some excerpts from victim impact statements. In the court case, the three victims were referred to as Jane Doe 1, Jane Doe 2, and Jane Doe 3. We now know that they are Jen B., who is Jane Doe 1, Nisha Trout, Jane Doe 2, and Chrissy B., Jane Doe 3. And we're going to go over their accounts of what happened, as well as what role the Church of Scientology had in the aftermath of their attacks. Some could say creating the environment for their attacks in the first place.
Yeah, I would absolutely say that that is accurate.
Mm-hmm. And so this is going to be a two-part episode. So in the first, we're going to focus on the case against Masterson, the court case, all that. And then in the second episode, we're going to take a closer look at Scientology and some of the church's practices. Now, we are not Scientologists. We don't really, until this, we didn't really know a ton about it. So we're just conveying what we have found from other people's accounts and information that's out there, and just condensing that information for you as we have read it.
Right.
So this is not, don't take any of this as necessarily complete fact or anything. We're just telling you what we have compiled. And just in case you are not aware of who Danny Masterson is, we'll start out by going over what put him in a position where he could use his power and influence to do absolutely despicable things. So he was born in March of 1976, putting him at 47 years old at the time of this recording. Don't even talk to me about how hurtful that is. He was born and raised in Long Island, New York. He has an older brother, Christopher, who's also an actor. Christopher starred in Malcolm in the Middle as Francis alongside Frankie Muniz and Bryan Cranston. Did he also play the young guy in My Best Friend's Wedding, the little brother? He had hair just like Danny Masterson's curly hair in that movie.
Yeah, but no, I thought that that was, Chris O'Donnell? Are you sure?
It's definitely not Chris O'Donnell. I know what Chris O'Donnell looks like.
I swear.
His name is Christopher Masterson?
I would think so, yeah.
Totally him. Scotty O'Neill.
Oh, good for you.
He's the little guy.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Because I was like, that looks just like him. And he had the curly hair like Danny Masterson. Okay. So that's where I know him from. I didn't watch Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah, I didn't either. And I we're going to talk more about like other family members and just keep going. Because mm-hmm. I didn't watch any of the things that anybody watched or was in.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So later, Masterson's half-sister, Elena, would star in 61 episodes of The Walking Dead as Tara Chamber. Did not know they were related. I watched the hell out of that show.
Yes, you did.
His half-brother, Jordan Masterson, is also an actor who has been in various things, but he's probably most well-known for a recurring role on Last Man Standing, starring Tim Allen. I've never watched that. Mm-mm. So seeing his older brother act, the bug bit Danny at a young age as well. At the age of 4, he started working as a child model and was featured in magazine ads and television commercials. Around 8, he starred in musicals and started acting in different roles. By the time he hit his teenage years, his singing voice had disappeared and he focused solely on acting. By the time he was 16, he had appeared in over 100 commercials, including national spots for Frosted Flakes, Hardee's, Hostess, Tang, and Clearasil.
Wow. Busy little bee.
Busy.
Yeah.
In the early 1990s, he got the role of Seth in Beethoven's Second.
I remember this.
Yep. And a recurring role in the TV sitcom Sybil.
Because he was Rice's... Remember the daughter? Her name was Rice.
In Sybil?
No.
Oh, I was like, I
Beethoven.
Don't remember. Oh.
Yeah.
Not really.
It was also the girl, she was in The Nanny, but that's, Rice. I remember that. And I was like, what kind of name is Rice? It's like,
yeah, like
kind of like Reese, but not. I'm thinking of the Friends episode where he's like, what kind of name is Chandler? It's kind of like Chandelier, but it's not.
Yeah. Obviously, I forgot all about Rice. He was in the 3rd and 4th seasons before deciding to move on. And then he auditioned for a show known originally as Teenage Wasteland. I did not know that's what they initially called that show. I think that changing it to that 70s show, it's a good change.
Teenage Wasteland, though, it tracks.
Yeah, it's a fairly accurate description.
But it's kind of a heavier name.
Yeah. Initially, the casting director expressed hesitation about letting him audition because he was a couple years older than what they were looking for. But Masterson's audition blew them away and he was cast as Stephen Hyde, the tough, funny guy. That 70s show became a huge success for the Fox network and launched its stars into superstardom. They became household names to many throughout the country, and Masterson starred in all 8 seasons of the show. It opened the door for other acting jobs in various movies and TV shows, and he starred in the Netflix show The Ranch alongside 70s show alum Ashton Kutcher, as well as Sam Elliott and Alicia Cuthbert. I have never watched the show, so.
I've seen an episode, I think. It's not for me personally, but I do love Sam Elliott.
I know, I love Sam Elliott. In the show, he played Kutcher's brother, Rooster, and in the middle of the 20-episode third season, Masterson was just written out of the series. And in the show, they said, oh no, he had a motorcycle accident, flew right off a cliff, and he's dead. Sorry.
Jeez. Like, at least he didn't go down an elevator shaft. Like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you're like today you were working on it and you were recording as normal or whatever. And then like, you go home that night and all of this stuff
breaks
open. Yeah. And then they're like, well, that puts a damper on tomorrow's recording. So they're like, okay, when we start tomorrow, we'll just be like, he fell off a cliff and died. Move on. Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, accidents happen. Like, I don't.
Yeah. So they ended up bringing in Dax Shepard to play a cousin of Kutcher to replace Masterson for the remaining episodes of the third season and then the entire fourth season.
Again, good change. I'm sure.
I know. I love Dax Shepard.
Same.
Masterson was the only cast member from that 70s show not invited back to the revival, that 90s show, which was made by Netflix. And it takes place 15 years after the like 70s show. It centers around Eric and Donna's daughter staying with her grandparents, Red and Kitty, in Point Place, Wisconsin, and forming bonds with local teenagers. The character of Stephen Hyde is never brought up, not mentioned, not one time.
And everybody else, I mean, existed. I watched, again, episode. I could not get into it. It just is not, I wanted it too much to be like that 70s show and it just didn't get it for me.
And yeah, I heard it was not good.
I didn't enjoy it personally, but I had high hopes for it. But yeah, he was not, from what I saw anyway, he was like, he did not exist.
Nope, exactly. So why was he written out of a show and not invited back to a revival of the show that made him very super famous, you ask? Well, that's an easy answer. He's a complete and total shitbag, and we will tell you all about it.
Yes. So, to speak to the timeline that we're going to follow a little bit, we are going to go over what each person testified to regarding what Masterson did to them. We are basically going to jump from to the trial and then go from there. So,
also, I just want to say, I watched like 900,000 videos on trial recaps of people that were in the courtroom. So I have some stuff that I learned.
Torella lives for a trial.
Court TV, call me because I want to be a professional court attender. So interesting to me.
It's all I want to do. Doing the Lord's work. That's amazing for you. So, as we mentioned in our episode summary, in March of 2017, 3 women went to the LAPD and filed sexual assault allegations against Masterson, who denied the allegations through his agent. These filings triggered an investigation by the LAPD, and in December of 2017, the fourth victim came forward with the assault allegations as well. Masterson was then fired from The Ranch by Netflix. The streaming giant released a statement that said, quote, yesterday was his last day on the show and production will resume in early 2018 without him. Masterson said via a statement that he was, quote, obviously very disappointed in Netflix's decision to write his character out of the show. If we want to talk about things that are disappointing.
I know, right?
Just saying. A few weeks later, a fifth woman came forward and made allegations, and shortly thereafter, Masterson was dropped by United Talent Agency as a client. Over the next 3 years, the LAPD conducted an investigation into all of the allegations brought forth against Masterson. On June 17th, 2020, he was charged with raping a 23-year-old woman in 2001, a 28-year-old woman in early 2003, a 23-year-old woman in late 2003. Busy, busy, busy.
Well, yeah, exactly. But like listening to some of the testimony in the trial, like when they interview, or I'm sorry, examine, cross-examine, I don't know, whatever. When the police officers from the LAPD testified, mm-hmm. it was just, you know, a big thing that a lot of these officers were like, well, I don't remember, I don't have an independent recollection of like talking to these women 20 years ago.
Right.
Like, I need to look at my report. And I'm just like, 2000 was 20 years ago.
Oh, gosh.
2003 was.
I don't accept that.
That was hard for me.
Yeah, no, I do not. I just rebuke cannot. It in the name of the Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It's 20 years ago. My God. Yeah.
Shut up. Also. Moving along. He would plead not guilty in January of 2021, and a preliminary hearing began in May of 2021. It went on for 4 days, and at the end, Judge Charlene F. Almedo, said that she found, quote, all three witnesses to be credible and the evidence presented during a preliminary hearing sufficient to support the charges. She ordered a trial on 3 counts of rape by force or fear and ordered Masterson to relinquish his passport at the next arraignment in June of 2021. At that arraignment,
also, oh my goodness. So sorry. One of the things that I wondered was how, because there's a statute of limitations on rape, right? Mm. So like, how is it that 20 years later you could bring charges on that? And from what I understand by the explanations I have found, is that in California, if rape is done by force, then that is a felony.
How is it not done by force?
Right. Well, they don't consider drugging by force.
Oh!
Uh-huh. Yeah, so that, the drugging part is not considered by force. In California, from what I have understood by explanations I've read online, okay? There was like a group of people technically that were accusing, it was like it meets the criteria for being able to go after charges this late.
Okay.
You know, 20 years later.
Sure. Stop it. But sure.
I know.
Oh, I'm really, really angered by what you just told me for a lot of different reasons, but. At that arraignment, he pleaded not guilty to all the charges, and his defense team said that the three Jane Does were colluding with one another to take Masterson down. They also claimed that one of the women had gotten money from Masterson in 2004 after the alleged incidents took place. A pretrial hearing was set for August of 2021, and Masterson remained free on a $3.3 million bail. During this pretrial hearing, the judge had to reject several subpoena requests from the defense. She called them stunningly overbroad in the information they were trying to obtain from them. They included requests for LAPD records relating to David Miscavige. He is the leader of Scientology and also an utter shit bag. And Shelley Miscavige, his wife. They tried to subpoena the producers for Leah Remini's show Scientology in the Aftermath. And they tried to subpoena an investigative journalist. And it really seemed like they were just like throwing shit at the wall, seeing what would stick. They also filed a motion to dismiss all the charges due to lack of evidence. And Judge Almedo sent that motion to another judge to review to see if there was any merit to it. And in November of 2020, the judge ruled that the testimony of the alleged victims was credible and sufficient to support the charges. So the trial was set for August of 2022, but then was moved to October 11th, 2022.
Okay, so now we're going to talk about Jane Doe 1. Jane Doe 1, as she was called during the trial, was a Scientologist like Masterson was. She was a second-generation Scientologist. In April of 2003, she attended a party at Masterson's house. And at one point during the night, Masterson brought her a drink. She wasn't sure what it was, but she could see that it was a red cocktail. Not long after drinking it, she began to feel nauseous. She was suspiciously drowsy. She was terrified because after drinking this drink, she also had trouble breathing properly and her vision was blurred.
It's going to be so terrifying.
Absolutely terrifying. She testified that around 2 in the morning, Masterson had begun to drag her through the house by her wrists, saying something to the effect of, quote, you know the 15-second rule. She did know the 15-second rule. So what that is it was like apparently known around his parties that Danny Masterson would randomly give someone, likely, I would think, women, 15 seconds to empty out their pockets or remove anything they don't want to get wet, and then he would throw them into the pool or the jacuzzi. How fun. What a wonderful person to be around. I would be like, go away. Like, I don't want to deal with that. I don't like that.
Yeah. What a hilarious thing to do at parties for your guests.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, nobody wants to be around that, but okay. So she said she pulled off her leather boots and was trying to unzip her pants to get them off, but she can't remember if she was able to do that or not. She knew that she had somewhere to be in the morning. She didn't have a change of clothes with her, so she didn't want to get all of her clothes wet. She remembered that for some reason, she didn't have what she described as her, quote, normal strength, and she was losing control of her motor skills, and her brain was, quote, blurry. That's how she described it. The next thing she knew, she was in the jacuzzi. She was pissed because, remember, she had plans that morning. It's already after 2 a.m. And so she's got stuff that morning, which is now just a couple hours away, and she has no change of clothes. Someone brought her a towel so she could dry off, but she could not stand up. So she knew something's wrong, right? She said she felt like she was going to throw up. And that's when she heard someone come up from behind her and say, quote, she just needs to throw up. And it was Danny Masterson saying that. So he said, I'll take her upstairs and put my fingers down her throat and make her vomit. At this point, Masterson and another man, Luke Watson, were arguing about him taking her upstairs. And she said it seemed like Luke was trying to keep Masterson from taking her. He picked her up, and she remembered Luke saying something that implied that he didn't want her alone with Masterson. And Masterson said, quote, she's my homie. I would never. Never what?
Yeah.
And I would never what?
Well, again, if this is something, because we just covered, or we have been covering the House of Hammer, right? And if this is something that a lot of people in your circle know, dude, don't let women be alone with Danny Masterson.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh my gosh.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a failure of every human being around, every single one of these women.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, why are you scared for a woman to be alone with him? Then don't let her be alone with him.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like, but I also feel like the role of Scientology plays into this somewhat, and I'm not giving them a pass or anything like that, but Danny Masterson was in good standing. That, what do they call him? Upstat or something like that.
I don't remember.
Which means they're in very good standing in Scientology. And Danny was a member who had ethics protection, which meant that if you filed a complaint about him, first of all, you don't file a complaint about a fellow Scientologist. They make that very clear. But if you are to file a complaint about someone who has ethics protection, they call this filing a complaint with a yawn, which means that you, sure, you can file the complaint, but you will be investigated. They won't. You will. Because why are you filing a complaint against somebody who is in good standing like that and has ethics protection? And then on top of that, no further action will take place. Like, as far as like, they're not, this person's not going to be punished or anything because they have ethics protection. Like, they can't get in trouble. So I just wonder if some of that was, you don't say something to somebody like that. He's a celebrity. Celebrities are very big
in Scientology.
You know, movers and shakers in Scientology. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know. So he takes her to the bathroom up the stairs. But it was pointed out during her testimony, there was a much closer bathroom downstairs that he could have taken her to so that she could vomit. So why does she have to go upstairs?
Right.
Where you're away from everybody? Once they were in the bathroom, she testified that Masterson did shove his fingers down her throat and she threw up all over herself. And he said, quote, oh, you're disgusting. You threw up everywhere.
What did you think was going to happen, though? Because there's...
You actually put your fingers down her throat.
Yeah, there's like a cause and effect situation that has happened here. And also, that's exactly what you said you were going to bring her up there to do. So... And now he's like, ew. Yeah. Brody, ew. Can't believe he threw up.
I know. So she said at that point, she passed out and she remembered coming to for brief moments the rest of the night. Terrifying. The next thing she remembered was the shower running and him saying, quote, you've got to get in the shower. You're disgusting. She said that she didn't remember taking her clothes off. She couldn't remember if she was naked or just in her underwear, but he was on top of her, soaping her breasts. He told her to take soap from him, and when she tried to, she dropped it. He told her to pick it up, and she kept fumbling with it. He grabbed her by her hair and pulled her back up. He then picked her up from the shower and took her into his bedroom, which at this point is very dark. She said she passed out again. Like, that's just so terrifying because you know, like, this is a man. I know something's wrong with me because I'm not breathing properly. I can't even pick up a bar of soap. I'm in and out of consciousness. Like, she knows this is happening.
She's like a prisoner in her own body. Like, she...
Yes. Yeah. She can't do anything about it. That's just so terrifying. And now he's bringing her into the bedroom.
And she's powerless like, to stop it. Oh, my God. Yeah. Yes.
She passed out again. When she came to, she said that he was on top of her and inside of her. She tried to fight back and shoved a pillow at his face, but he grabbed it and pushed it on her face, and then she passed out again. She came to again and tried to get away and reached towards the nightstand. He grabbed her throat and squeezed with one hand while holding her wrists with the other. And she testified that she remembered him telling her, quote, this feels good. You like this. You're not going to tell fucking anybody. Then there was a knock at the door and he stopped and he said, quote, don't move. Don't say a fucking word. He then went to the door and she passed out again. She woke back up, rolled off the bed and crawled to a door, not knowing it was a closet. This was a big deal at trial. The defense attorney. I don't know. Like, he was just so bad. I don't understand what his strategy was. So his strategy during this part of the testimony was to ask her how dark it was in that room. And she's like, I don't know, pretty fucking dark, right? And he's like, well, you testified that there might have been a light on in the hallway or something like that. Like, he would take these very little things that and be like,
don't have,
but exactly
weight, right?
How dark, yeah, exactly how dark was it? You said it was pitch black, but now you're saying that you were crawling on the floor and there was a light on in the closet, which she didn't realize was a closet. She thought it was going to get her out of his bedroom. So she could see the light coming from underneath the door. And so she crawled toward that, which gave a little light, right? He's like, but you said it was pitch black. You didn't say there was any light. You didn't say there was that much light. Just and she's like, well, it was dark, but like my eyes adjusted some.
Well, yeah. Is the point of that to just poke holes and try to be like, see how she's not credible, obviously.
Yes. So then he would basically come, you know, make the point that like, well, if they can't remember these little details, then maybe the rape didn't even happen. Maybe they're mistaken about even having been raped. Like, that's the point he's trying to make. He didn't say it outright like that, but like he did this to every single person. And I can't remember which Jane Doe it was because the jacuzzi comes up with more than one, but there was one and it was, again, I apologize. I can't remember if it was this one or the other one, the other Jane Doe who had part of her testimony had to do with the jacuzzi. He went on and on and on with her about what temperature was the jacuzzi. And she's like, I don't know. It felt like a jacuzzi. Like, I don't remember getting in it and feeling like it was cold. So it was jacuzzi temperature. Was it hot? Was it lukewarm? Was it what? Like, because he felt like she had said something inconsistent in one statement versus another, that it was warmer or colder or whatever. And so he picked that apart for an excruciating amount of time, according to the people who were in the courtroom. And again, it's like, well, if she didn't know how hot the jacuzzi was, then did it even happen?
Oh my God.
Like, just,
I feel like that's badgering the witness.
Yeah. And he got admonished several times for being argumentative with the witnesses. He also got admonished during the opening statements because, like, the prosecution kept having to object to his opening statement. And finally, the judge was like, he was just completely misstating things in the case, like misstating other people's like testimony. He kept bringing in testimony from the first trial. She was like, you can't do that. Like, he just kept on and kept on, like, completely misstating facts and misrepresenting them. And clearly he knew he was doing that. And so finally she was like, quit. Like, you can stop doing that. You are doing this over and over and over. You got to quit doing that. So he kind of had to change his whole opening statement.
Like on the fly.
Because, yeah, he had built it around misrepresentations.
Well, was it his first day on the job?
I know. That's, I'm just like, what is happening? I don't know. So anyway, he went after her on this, how much light was coming from the closet. And, but you said it was dark, but that's not totally dark. That it was a whole thing. So she said she goes inside the closet, she lays there, and then she passed out again. She woke later and realized it was daylight, so she made her way out of the closet. Danny was on the bed and asked her what the fuck she was doing. He put her on the bed, but he didn't touch her after that. So later, she got up and went downstairs and asked Luke what happened. And she says that he said, quote, nope, 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 you're going straight to the president's office. So the president that he's referring to was the president of the Celebrity Center. And the president happened to be Luke's mother. Okay. But as we mentioned, she had plans with her family and had met them for a flight to Clearwater, Florida. And we'll talk more about these things in part two when we talk about Scientology practices and things. She was in extreme pain. She was having difficulty sitting. About 24 hours after the attack, bruises started to appear on her wrists, hips, thighs, and neck. Her younger cousin asked her about them, and she just said that something terrible had happened to her. Back in LA, Jane Doe 1 went to the Master at Arms, which is the ethics officer in Scientology, to report what happened, and was told, if you're going to say the word rape, don't say it. We don't say that word here. She was ordered by the church official to not report anything to the LAPD, or she would be declared a suppressive person by the church. And we will talk more about that in part two, but basically you don't want to be designated as an SP or suppressive person because you are cut off from everyone, everything. You're excommunicated. It's a big damn deal. She was told to attend counseling put on by the church, which she had to pay for. That's $15,000.
Jeez.
In these auditing sessions, they try to examine any wrongdoings that, like, you have committed in a past life in order to deserve what was happening to you in your current life. And the Scientology calls that pulling it in, I think. You pulled it in. Basically, you caused it. You've done something to deserve what has happened mm-hmm. to you. This very much reminds me of the like IBLP, Bill Gothard.
I was going to say that, yeah.
Shiny Happy People mm-hmm. thing, where it's like they do it a little bit differently. It's like, yeah, but God can use you more if you've had a trauma like that.
And people were like, you know, man, that kind of stuff. I wish I went through something.
Mm-hmm. They also very much believe, or put on especially female victims of sexual assault, that you've done something to deserve it. You had a heel on your shoe that was that much too tall, or you had lace on your, you know, from here to here.
Yeah.
On your mid-calf length skirt. Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know. It seems very similar to me. In April of 2004, there was a meeting set up between Masterson and Jane Doe 1 for him to hear what it felt like from her perspective and confront what he had done. And he spent the whole time interrupting, cracking jokes, so much so that the official overseeing everything got angry and stopped the meeting altogether. Later in 2004, she heard about another woman who had been assaulted by Masterson, and JD1 wanted to go to the police. She sent a letter to the Justice Chief of Scientology, Mike Ellis, requesting permission to do so without being branded as a suppressive person. And his response was, dear, her name, Jane Doe number 1, thank you for your letter. You're correct that this situation does need to be resolved for the good of all concerned. Regarding bringing civil suit against Danny, this is something that you will have to decide for yourself after reviewing the alternatives and possible consequences carefully. If you do decide to go forward with this, you may consider that you have fulfilled your ecclesiastical obligation to inform IJC as covered in HCO PL7, March 1965, RB, Suppressive Acts, Suppression of Scientology and Scientologists. So this is what I guess they're like bylaw on that. Regardless of your decision in the legal arena, you do need to apply LRH, L. Ron Hubbard, technology as the ultimate solution to any problem. Love, XOXO, Mike Ellis, International Justice Chief.
I would have preferred a beef. A beef. A best.
A beef.
Why would I would have preferred a beef? I don't even know where that came from.
Do we sign things like that? Beef. Mike Ellis.
Well, and I'm going to start now.
Well, yeah.
Just to let everyone know that we have beef.
Oh,
we are beefing. Yes. Mm-hmm. Best would have been was what I was
in beef. Mike Ellis.
Stay beefing.
Yeah.
Mike Ellis.
Exactly. A, B, B. Always be beefing. So to read that, it seems like it gives permission for her to go to the authorities to a non-Scientologist. But to anyone who knows the inner workings of the religion, this sends a clear message that Jane Doe 1 needs to very carefully think about what she's considering, because there are clear actions and consequences that would be taken, which she could look up the high crimes and suppressive acts to see them. Everything is so wordy. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just so wordy. The letter was written by a lawyer to be just innocuous enough that a judge maybe wouldn't see it as threatening, but somebody in the church would be able to read between the lines very, very easily. In June of 2004, Jane Doe 1 reported the attack to the police, and they were bombarded with letters and affidavits from Scientologists vouching for Masterson. They also claimed that Jane Doe 1 told them that the sex with Masterson was the, quote, best sex she ever had. Like,
a lie.
Exactly, a lie. No, she didn't. Here is the very interesting thing. Scientology keeps trying to go to, like, oh, but she said it was consensual and, like, that kind of stuff. But why did you, like, if you look at the methods and, like, the protocols that Scientology has in place for things like this, why did they call the meeting between them so that Danny Masterson could understand the negative effect that this had on her?
Right.
If they did not find that the attack did in fact happen.
Right. Like, they why did. Would he need to hear her side of it or hear her experience of it if it was a consensual, everybody wants to do what is happening here type of exchange? Because mm-hmm. it simply did not happen.
No, she didn't go to them and say, I had the best sex I ever had with him. Now I want to have a meeting to discuss how that hurt me.
No.
It doesn't even make any sense.
No.
And the fact that they called the meeting shows, and I've watched like a bajillion like court recaps and stuff
we
by
know.
Aaron. I always get him mixed up. Aaron Smith-Levin? Aaron
yes.
Levin, I think it's Smith-Levin. But he says, because of the way that everything is set up in Scientology, and he used to be a Scientologist, that the fact that those meetings and the way that those things went, like were called, and that they took the steps they took, it means that Scientology found that it happened. So they like, but now they almost like deny that it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, no, she said it was the best sex she ever had. Well, no.
It's a contradiction.
Because
in,
yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. In July of 2004, the police told her that unless more victims came forward or more evidence was found, the case would be closed.
Jane Doe, too, took the stand and talked about how she knew Danny Masterson. She said that she joined Scientology at the age of 16 when her mother thought that she would benefit from it. She identified Masterson in court and said that they met through the church. Towards the end of 2003, she lived a few blocks away from him, and one night, she and a friend had gone to a bar called The Well. Masterson and Luke Watson were there as well. Why is Luke such good friends with this guy if he knows this much? I just am confused.
I know. I don't get it either. He seemed to just, yeah, always be hanging out with him.
Yeah. She said that as they were hanging out, having a few drinks, Masterson was staring at her, like, menacingly. She said that it was very predatorial. She said that she had seen and talked to him before, and it was very innocuous, but this time was completely different. She said that it made her feel a combination of flattery and intimidation. Masterson approached and told her to give him her number, which she did. A couple days later, he starts texting her, like, a lot, like, all at once. And it was very commanding stuff, like, not really talking or asking questions. And she mentions that it was basically, quote, come over to my house, bring a bathing suit, you're getting in the pool. She said that she tried to, quote, hold her own, so to speak, and say no, that she was not going to be in the pool, and if he wanted, he could take her on a date like a normal person would. But eventually, after the text didn't stop, she relented and did go to his house. He answered the door and welcomed her in. She sat on his couch and he handed her a glass of red wine. She was asked on the stand what she expected from that night, and she said maybe some flirting, a kiss or two, nothing more than that. She asked for a tour of the house and Masterson did not give it to her. Absolutely not. We're not doing that. Masterson continued to be demanding and spoke in a voice described in the church as, quote, toned 40.
They have so many
terms,
like so much jargon. Yeah. That like you would only get if you were in the church. It's so, I don't know. It's just a lot.
Like another language.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Yeah. I don't know. Tone 40 involves talking in a forceful enough voice so that the target knows that you mean business.
Is the target their word? Because that feels very, you know what I mean?
Predatory and
yes,
aggressive.
The target?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like what?
I don't know. But there's a lot from what I have seen. Now, again, I don't know everything or even enough about Scientology to claim to be like, oh, I know a lot about Scientology. You know, like I just don't know that much. But
right.
From what yeah. I've seen, there are a lot of military things. Like they all salute each other.
Uh-huh.
Like target
yeah,
acquired.
Yeah, it feels, exactly. Yeah. It feels like that. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. It's like, it's kind of like that. Yeah. So she said that once she was in the jacuzzi, everything just basically faded away. So he was saying, come to the backyard, come to the jacuzzi, take your clothes off right now, take them off. If you don't do it, I'm going to do it. I'm going to strip you right here. Yeah. No, 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 no. And then at this point, she remembers once she was in the jacuzzi, everything just faded basically. And she remembers them making out and kissing. She hadn't removed all of her clothing. She was wearing a pink camisole and underwear and a bra. But the next thing that she remembered was Masterson ordering her to go up stairs to the shower. She said that it was very domineering and she obeyed him because she was frightened. She said that she kept trying to reject him without angering him. They were both in the shower, but she couldn't remember if he was naked or not. And she mentioned that he might have had shorts on. They kissed and he put his hands on her groin. Everything was fuzzy and hazy and she thought he put his fingers in her. Then he quickly pulled them out and inserted his penis in her vagina. She told him no and to stop, but it seemed like he just did not care. He stopped for a second. He told her to go to his bedroom, which she did, and told him that they could not have sex. He kept kissing her heavier and heavier, and she just became more and more out of it as the effects of the drink worsened. He used his fingers in her vagina and said, quote, look at your face. Look at how your face is. From there, he proceeded to rape her repeatedly. She said that he ravaged her like she was a rag doll, very, very rough. She said that he came on her stomach and went and got a wet, hot towel and cleaned it up, pretending to be a gentleman. They talked for a couple of hours. He spoke to her casually about subjects such as his latest Scientology confessional, how Mila Kunis is so pretty. He thought that she was just really, really pretty. At around 5 a.m., she walked home. Jane Doe 2 told her mom and best friend about what had happened, and she never told the church because she knew that she would be in trouble.
Exactly. Because he has ethics protection.
We do not.
And she would be.
We don't talk about Bruno. Right. We don't use the R word.
Mm-mm. And she would be investigated intensely. Mm-hmm. And we have heard from other people's experiences that you get harassed and all kinds of stuff.
Right.
If you're the target of that type of investigation, it's just, but she did tell people right away. And that's a big thing. Like, we know that a lot of people who have been through an assault like that don't tell people for sometimes a very long time, sometimes ever. It's just the way that that works.
And
it's,
also
that's human nature.
Yeah. Guess what? Any way that you handle a situation, that's the right way to handle it.
Exactly. You do what you need to do for you.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the witnesses, like an expert witness at the trial, was somebody who had not looked over any of like the testimony of these women, anything like that. She was just there to testify to how victims of rape tend to move forward, right? Just like, or sexual assault, like just how it, statistics and all of that kind of stuff happen. And she said that they asked specifically about false reporting. And she said the false reporting rate is between 2 and 8%. So if you think about that, though, like there's three accusers who he's being charged with in this trial, but there's like 7 or 8 that have come forward. So like they're all like,
what are the odds?
False reporting rate. Yeah. Like, you could say maybe one of them if you want to, like, you know, bring in like statistics, but that's a lot of people, right? So it's not likely.
Well, and I'm going to go with the Cat Williams quote. People don't say the same shit about you for that long and it not be true. Okay. Yep. So
there's a reason. Yeah. And she also said that because, of course, you know, they kind of came at some of these women for not fighting back and, you know, all that typical victim defense shaming. Of rape. Yeah, yeah. And blaming and all that. And this woman actually said that a large percentage of people don't fight back when it's somebody that they know, but a large percentage actually don't fight back when it's even a stranger. Like most sexual assault happens with somebody that you know. But even when it is a stranger attack, you're so scared that, and you think if I just
comply,
you know, we've heard it said, if I comply, they won't hurt me or it, you know, they'll go away and like all that kind of stuff. So that's not unusual.
Well, and also, because what are we talking about fighting back? Because she used her words to fight back. She said, we're not having sex. And then he big fat did it anyway.
Mm-hmm. And what was she going to do? She'd been drugged.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, what is the definition of fighting back? Because exactly. If you say the words, absolutely not, I don't want to do this, even if you don't, if the answer is not yes, then it's a no.
Exactly. Exactly. And I mean, how many times do we have to refer back to the consent using tea video?
I want to have some tea today.
Yeah. Maybe you're okay with it yesterday, but you're not okay with it today.
Yeah, maybe I don't want it tomorrow.
Maybe you were okay with it 5 minutes ago. But maybe, you're not now.
Maybe I'm in the middle of having some tea and then I decide I don't want to have any tea anymore.
I don't want to have tea anymore. Mm-mm. I'm done with this tea.
No, because guess what? Consent is sexy and we love that. Mm-hmm. I stole that from Swoop, I think. Either ways, it's good.
Either ways, it's a good saying, yeah. So Jane Doe number 3 was Chrissy Bixler. So, and she's very... public with all of these things now.
Well, yeah, and we wouldn't out somebody that did not.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
No.
So Chrissy and Danny Masterson dated and lived with one another for 6 years. They had met at a party in 1996 when she was working as a model. Within 2 weeks, they were living together. She was 18 and he was 22. A year into the relationship, Danny Masterson became sexually aggressive. Now, this is just terrifying. But Chrissy would be sleeping often. This happened often and would wake up to him having sex with her. He would already be having sex with her when she woke up. And that happened all the time. Like, that's not even the part that she's reporting, you know? That's not the part. Like, that's just insane to me.
Yeah, that's like baseline for them.
That he thinks that is acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're together, so I can have sex with you anytime I want, even if you are not coherent or conscious.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, obviously, that's kind of his thing. But you know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah,
I don't know.
No,
it's just
no.
Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
She would push him off. He would put his hands down her pants in front of his mother.
That's awkward.
Mrs. Masterson, I need you to get your son.
Snatch him up. Like, yes.
Yes. He also became physically and emotionally abusive. In November of 2001, Chrissy, again, woke up to Danny having sex with her, and she was not happy about it. She said, quote, I did something that I knew would make him angry. I pulled his hair. He has rules. No touching the hair, no touching the face.
It's not funny, but it is laughable that people who have no respect for anybody else's boundaries have these staunch boundaries in place. And it's like, they're the only ones that matter, obviously. I mean, that's how it works with...
Don't touch my hair. That's the most important thing.
Don't touch my face either. And it's like, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah. You may take several seats.
Exactly. Sir. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So she pulled his hair to get him off of her. Now, this pissed him off. And she said, I knew he was going to be mad about it because he didn't want anybody touching his hair, right? So he responded by hitting her face with a loose fist. She said, I got angry, screaming at him to get off me. He was still inside me. He finally got off me and spit on me. He did that often. He called me white trash. And Chrissy states that she remembers this incident because it was the first time that he had hit her. This is another thing that the defense attorney and on cross-examination hammered at. Was his fist open?
Oh my God.
Was it closed? Was it lightly? Because in her police report, so this came up a lot. In the when she talked to the police, she would give her statement, right? And then they would paraphrase and repeat back to her. So in this, she said it wasn't a closed fist. It wasn't an open hand, but he hit me with kind of like a loose fist or whatever in the face. And so the detective responds back. So he slapped you. And she goes, yeah, sure. Yeah. You know? So then the defense attorney would be like, well, remember you said that he slapped you.
I hate
but now
this
you're not
guy.
Saying that he slapped you.
I hate yeah. this guy.
And she would say, they repeated things back to me. And I think it was her. Well, one of them said, if I had known when I talked to these police officers that I was going to have to be cross-examined on that and every single word picked apart, she's like, I'm just answering the questions they're asking me. And when they paraphrase stuff back to me, okay. Like she said, if you want to consider that a slap, then okay, that's what you're considering a slap. Like, yeah, he hit me, you know? But it was just that he spent the whole, that was his whole argument. He didn't even call any witnesses.
Well, and I mean,
that was his whole case.
Right. But I mean, and I'm not excusing his behavior or being like, well, I mean, can you blame him? But what did he have? He didn't have much to work with, I'm sure.
Exactly. Yeah. He had.
Like, I guess that's like, well, this is the only play we can use here. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Which obviously the jury was like, that's the problem then, isn't it? If that's all you've got.
Well, and also, if you got to work with what you've got as a lawyer, but you do it so much that people are like, I mean, like, it's like his only defense, if you want to call it that, was worked against him because everybody's like, oh my God, shut up. Like, stop.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. In December of 2001, Chrissy and Masterson had dinner and she said, one or two glasses of wine. And the last thing she remembers is standing up to go home. She woke up the next morning confused and in a lot of pain. She went downstairs and confronted Danny and indicated that her anus was injured, and he laughed at her. She asked him if he had had sex with her, and he replied, yes. She asked if she had been unconscious, and he said, yes. She told him that she was going to report him to the church, and he said, that's fine. Go ahead. The next day, Chrissy went to the ethics office and talked to her master at arms. This is who I was telling you about yesterday, Tori, Miranda Scoggins. Yes, I could not remember her name. Scoggins told her, you can't rape someone you're in a relationship with. And don't use the word rape again. And honestly, it is, I think a lot of people think that that's how it is. Like, I'm not giving her a pass. She's doing that maliciously. But I think there are a lot of, particularly women, that think, you know, well, we're married, so I can't, or we're together, so it can't be, you know, because rape is something that a stranger does to you.
Right, right.
And that's really sad.
That is sad. But like, did Lorena Bobbitt not, did she do everything in vain?
I know, she forged a path. She forged a
and
path.
Not that she was the first one, but she was the one that, for me, I was like, oh, shit. You know, mm-hmm. like, wow.
Exactly. Because, yeah, especially in the 90s, you know?
Yeah.
But I think a lot of women will not come forward because they're like, well, we're in a relationship, so I really don't have a right to say anything.
It is.
And it's just sad.
Yeah, and predatory men. And apparently this fucking Scoggins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Saggy Scoggins is doing it too. And what is this master at arms? You see what I'm saying with the military stuff? It's like,
yes, master at arms. Yeah, high crimes. And yeah. So Scoggins showed her the high crimes policies in Scientology, one of which is reporting a fellow Scientologist to law enforcement. So Scoggins had Chrissy write a report about the incident, warning her not to use the R word. and focus on herself and what she might have done to pull in what had happened to her. So, and this was also the situation where, and she testified to this, that part of what they do in Scientology, which is just a wild practice to me, is that when they refer you to read the code or rule or whatever on this particular thing, in this case, what is going to happen to you if you report a fellow Scientologist to law enforcement? She has to act out.
Oh, yes.
What she read so that they can determine whether or not she understood it properly. But she acts it out with some little, like, I think they called it like a demonstration kit or something. And it has like marbles and paper clips and pins and shit in it. And so she, this is what it sounded like, is she had to take the marbles and be like, if I do this, then this, you know, whatever. And so if they determine that you do not understand it right, they make you read it again and keep demonstrating until you have the correct understanding of what will happen to you.
Wild.
According to previous Scientologists, that's what I have read. So in 2016, still a Scientologist at the time, Christy learned of what had happened to Jane Doe 1 from a friend of Masterson's. Christy called RAIN, the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, and asked them, quote, if you're in a relationship and you're unconscious and they have sex with you, is that rape? That is so sad. That, like, they made her think that. And she's like, but it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like that should happen, right? Like, so the person she was talking to then defined to her what rape was. And Chrissy said that she just broke down and cried. In 2009, Chrissy married Cedric Bixler Zavala, the lead singer of the bands At the Drive-In and Mars Volta. The Mars Volta, excuse me. There's a the in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, they're great bands, by the way.
Yeah. Cedric was a member of Scientology as well at the time, and he credited it for the change in his thoughts on drug use. He said at the time he was spending over $1,000 a week on weed, claiming it helped him be more creative. And he said the church helped him realize he was using it to form a bubble of sorts and to avoid people. So in November of 2017, he tweeted out two tweets saying that Masterson had sexually assaulted his wife and that one of the songs that he wrote on an At the Drive-In album was about that. He said the church routinely tried to cover up sexual assaults and silence sexual assault victims. He called it, quote, a modern day version of The Handmaid's Tale. Chrissy and Cedric have both talked about the harassment that they have both suffered at the hands of the church and its members. In August of 2019, four women filed a lawsuit against Masterson and the Church of Scientology for the stalking and harassment that they experienced from their rape allegations. They allege that the church, quote, mobilized an aggressive fair game campaign against them. So fair game describes the policies and practices carried out by the Church of Scientology towards people it perceives and groups it perceives as its enemies. So L. Ron Hubbard established the policy in the 1950s in response to criticism both from within and outside his organization. So individuals or groups who are fair game are judged to be a threat to the church and, according to the policy, can be punished and harassed using any and all means possible, whatever you got to do, right? And each had experienced different forms of this after they left the church. The tactics ranged from hurting pets multiple times to chasing them in cars and filming them, yelling at them, posting online ads for different sexual things with their contact information. In response, Masterson said, quote, I'm not going to fight my ex-girlfriend in the media like she's been baiting me to do for more than 2 years. So it seems like this civil trial was put on hold maybe when the criminal stuff started kind of coming out. In January of 2020, Chrissy and Cedric reported that a second of their family pets had to be euthanized due to being fed rat poison, alleging that both times it was at the hands of Scientologists in response to their repeated public claims about Masterson. They both released statements about these incidents, and we won't go into them, but they are absolutely heartbreaking. Just all the way around scary.
This case, to me, is very much The More You Know, because I loved that 70s show. And I think I can still love it. Like, I, you know, I can hopefully, I haven't watched it in years, but I did love it when it came on, and I still have very fond memories of watching it, but like, I did not see any of this coming. But I think that it is just so important. This is so important to talk about and let people know.
Absolutely.
And I am so glad. I am so, so, so glad that they took it as seriously as they did, and he got the time that he got, because so many times we see just a little slap on the wrist, and if that,
especially with a celebrity.
Absolutely. So
yeah, the jury saw right through it, man. And I also feel like a lot of credit goes to Judge Olmedo, mm-hmm. because she wasn't having it.
Good for her.
Yeah, she wasn't having it. So yeah, it's just, you know, and it's really funny to me that Danny Masterson, we heard from, I believe it was Jane Doe too, that he had that predatory stare that he would, you know, if he was going to do something to you, he had that just like
menacing stare. Look on his. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he actually got into a kerfuffle in the courtroom with, I think it might have been Jane Doe 1's husband, but he was sitting in the gallery in court and was staring at Danny Masterson. And Danny Masterson was like, what? And was like losing his cool about it. And so the bailiff came over and was like, what's going on? You know, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, this guy's staring at me, won't stop staring at me, you know, whatever. What are you looking at, man? Like, whatever. And it was just kind of
ironic.
He can dish it, but he can't, he can dish it out, but he can't take it in. Yeah. Like, oh, so you don't like people to stare at you. And so the judge was like, you can look at anybody you want to. That's fine. Just, you can't make faces at him, can't say anything to him, but you can look at him if you want to. And she said, well, obviously Mr. Masterson was feeling intimidated by you looking at him. And he said, I'm sorry, judge, I can't help how he feels, you know, when I'm looking at him. And she's like, no, you're right. You can't. That's, you know,
I live,
he's in control of how he feels. I know. I was like, but it's just so like, yeah, he doesn't want anybody looking at him.
What a weenie baby.
I know. Totally.
Again, this is, you're so right about the quote from, oh no, I was always the one telling you. Yes. I was always reminding you what the name of it was. And then I just big fat forgot about it, forgot the name. But yeah, there's nothing more dangerous than an insecure man.
Absolutely. Yep. And that came from, we need to find out the guy's name who, I just can't remember it off the top of my head, who said that in this documentary. But I mean,
yeah, it's absolutely true. And that's,
it's absolutely true.
Terrifying. Yep. But that is the end of part one, excuse me. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we'll be back next week with part two. Unless you're a patron at any level, you get part two right now immediately.
Ad free too. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. But thank you guys so much for hanging out. We love you, and we will catch you next episode.
Bye.
Bye.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. Connect with us on Instagram or Facebook to continue the conversation. Thanks for listening, and we will meet you back here next week.
Bye.
The theme song for the show is created and composed by Stephen Toby. You can find more of Stephen's work on SoundCloud. Our logo was created by Sloan Williams of Sophisticated Crayon. You can find more of her work on Etsy. Visit us at killerqueenspodcast.com for merch and other info about the show.